We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Good morning, and thank you so much for listening this morning. We have for you a crossover podcast with Emily Hesney Lynch of the It's a Lot podcast right here on the Lunchador Podcast Network. I want to explain to you what that means, what that is, and how you listen, because you may have noticed something else, and that is that perhaps when you looked at your podcast feed, you saw a podcast show up that you did not recognize called It's a Lot. So I'm going to explain to you what that is. So what you're hearing right now is, of course, the intro to the Pauly Guglielmo podcast, the one that you're listening to. We'll hear the intro song. We'll go into the interview just like normal, everything like normal. In real life, Emily and I sat down and talked for an hour and a half. Roughly halfway through, we switched from my podcast, basically me interviewing her, and we switched over to her interviewing me. And the best way we decided to put that out was that today on my feed, you're hearing my half of the interview. It will end with Emily's music basically starting, and it'll fade, and that's the point in which, if you want to hear the second half of the interview, which is really Emily interviewing me, then you would click on the It's a Lot podcast and you'll hear our conversation basically pick up right where we left off at the end of this episode. What I will do for you also is at the end of this particular file that you've just clicked on, this podcast, as her music starts, I will then come back on the microphone and just kind of say, hey, now what you need to do is go click on It's a Lot to hear the second half of this interview. And then vice versa, when her podcast is posted, it's going to be the same type deal, both podcasts on both feeds. So I know that's a little technical. Maybe you clicked on this and said, Pauly, that is, I do not want my brain to have to do that much thinking right now. It all boils down to, listen to this one. If you like what you're hearing, part two is on the It's a Lot podcast, which, if we did our job correctly, should have already shown up in your feed. All right? Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you being here. Please enjoy Emily Hesney Lynch. Oh my gosh! How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
So what don't you do though? I was reading about you. You do it all. What don't you do?
What don't I? I don't do a lot of things. I'm not a professional graphic designer. I can do a little bit of design, but there I'm not a pro. I do a little bit.
You're
of
very
website.
Tattooed. Did you design any of your own tattoos?
No, I did not. I came up with ideas for them, but that's about it.
Are they all very meaningful tattoos?
For the most part, yeah. There's one that is a turtle from an anime show that we are not even fully caught up on, but everything else is a little more meaningful than that.
You mean you haven't seen all the episodes? What if the turtle becomes the bad guy?
That is a concern, but I also have always loved turtles, so I'm not too worried.
I also am a turtle fan. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was like my first love, for sure.
Always a good one.
They just did like the 35th anniversary or something, and I brought my six-year-old son to the movie theater to see it, and you know what I forgot about the first Ninja Turtles movie? Hmm. It's a little serious. It's kind of a little dark. It's like there's real violence in it, and like blood, and like murder, and Ninja Turtles 2 and Beyond is way more like geared towards kids. Mm-hmm. It's way more about like the pizza and like the cowabunga dude. But the first one is about like karate and just kicking ass and stuff. And so I should have known when we went to theater, there were no kids there. Mm-hmm. I think my son was okay, like not permanently disturbed, but I don't know. I don't know if it was good. So I got home, I told my wife.
I doubt he's permanently disturbed. Maybe he won't even remember it.
Do you ever wonder if, like, what is my child going to tell their therapist one day? Like, did I just do the thing that my therapist is going to talk about? Like, well, my dad.
There's got to be something.
Like, every once in a while, I take out the garbage without a shirt on. And I don't think I'm supposed to do that. I don't know if that's okay.
Could be a lot worse.
I grew up in rural Ohio.
At least you have pants on, right? Presumably.
Yes. Normally there's pants on, yes. But I grew up in rural Ohio where, like, maybe you did take the garbage. I mean, I grew up in redneck Ohio, frankly, where maybe you did take the garbage out without a shirt on. I don't know. But I wonder if it's the thing he's going to talk about one day. All right. Anyway, I'm sorry. So, well, I started out by saying, what don't you do? Because I was reading about it, and you do. So we're going to talk a lot about being a mom, obviously. But, dude, you're an entrepreneur. And a professor at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I started professoring about 3 years ago, so I am still a little bit new at it, but I really enjoy it. But it is a lot on top of running a business, especially with limited childcare in this era we're in right now.
Yeah. Do you know how cool of a professor you probably are? Like, the professor comes in with purple hair and tattoos. Like, do you know how much they're probably like, oh, thank God?
I hope so.
Are
it's
you
always,
doctor?
I don't
doctor
know.
Has Neelinch?
No, no, I don't have a doctorate. I mean, they call me that, and I tell them not to.
I would just run with it.
Yeah. No, but it's a little embarrassing how much of an impulse I have to be liked by my students, and sometimes I'm like, oh God, do they not like me? Do they not think I'm cool?
I know.
Like, I had K-pop Demon Hunters as an example in class, and I was like, oh, they're gonna love this. And I'm like, who's seen the movie? And like, four kids raised their hand out of 20, and I was like, shit, I thought my reference would hit. It's like very relevant, but apparently not.
Where are you originally from?
I grew up in the Rochester area in Pittsburgh.
Which high school?
Sutherland.
Okay. And so, like, if I come, this is like one of my questions I ask everybody, but if I come to you on senior year, 12th grade, it's a graduation day, and I say, Emily, what are you going to be when you grow up? What's your answer?
An English teacher.
Oh, really? So do you go to college for that then? Or?
I went to U of R and studied English and History. So kind of, they didn't have an education program for like becoming a teacher in undergrad. So that was probably a good thing because it let me change my mind eventually.
What was your, like, what was the passion? What hooked you? What made you just love that and say, this is what I want to do?
I just didn't really know at all what I wanted to do. Like, I love to read. I've always been a really avid reader. Yeah. And I had a chance to study abroad in England during college and actually got to student teach British kids. And I was like, I don't enjoy this very much. Like, maybe I shouldn't become a high school teacher. So then I didn't go to grad school for teaching. It was the thing that changed my mind.
Did you run into the difference between American English and British English when you were there at all?
A little bit. And some of, like, the cultural and historical stuff is interesting. Like, they call it, like, they call the Revolutionary War something totally different, like the American War of Independence or something. And there was a broken heart between the UK and the US on a map and stuff. And
there's like somebody who does history, the other side of history on TikTok that I follow. And they tell the stories of wars. Like, what does that country think of that war? And it's such an interesting perspective of England's perspective on it is like, well, we sent them over there and now they just announced they're not going to pay their taxes anymore. So we're like, well, what the hell? We went over there to ask them for the taxes. And they shot at us. I said there's such a funny perspective on it.
Yeah, it sounds pretty accurate.
So we're like, for us, it's a very big deal. For them, they're like, they freaking shot at us, man. We thought we were friends.
I was like dying the first time I came into one of their high school classes and they introduced like, oh, Emily from America is here as a student teacher. And this kid goes, I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
That's funny. That's funny.
That's what we're known for.
I was an exchange student to Italy. And, you know, of course, I thought I was gonna be hot shit in English class. This is gonna be so easy. But that's where I got bit by American English because I just... First of all, my grammar's terrible, and it was even worse when I was 16. And second of all, everything's spelled differently. There's words. It's not apartment. It's flat. It's not bathroom. It's toilet or loo or maybe. I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Like, just all the... So I got, like, an 88 on my English test, and I was like, that's impossible. I'm fluent in English. And I remember the professor was like, no, you speak a dialect of English. And I was like,
damn.
It's
so funny, yeah.
Damn. That burns. Okay, so you go to school, you're going to be an English teacher. Do you become an English teacher?
No, I had no idea really what I wanted to do after college when I was like, well, I'm not going to get... I applied for Teacher America and didn't get into that. They have like this very long, convoluted process of interviews and stuff, and I got pretty far in it but didn't get in. Then I got into something called Partners in Reading. I think it was like an AmeriCorps nonprofit, and I was going to be like a reading tutor in a classroom in Baltimore. And the pay was $16,000 a year, and you got food stamps, and I didn't think I could afford an apartment, so I ended up turning down the job and living at home, working at Target, and eventually I ended up working at U of R for a few years at my alma mater and kind of figuring things out from there.
All right. So it's like it's mid-20s, kind of like mid-20s yeah. next, and you're just learning life.
Yeah.
Working at Target
mm-hmm.
And living at home. Did your parents, did they love having you home, or were they like, Emily, we got to talk about
No,
this.
They were pretty into it, I think. And yeah. it only lasted for about a year before I moved out to an apartment. Bad. Yeah.
And now I think it's like a lot more normal too in mm-hmm. mid-20s. Like a lot of the people who work here, they still live at home in their mid-20s. Maybe they need to be paid better, actually. I
yeah, life's
stop
pretty
talking.
Expensive.
I should stop talking, yes. So anyway, okay. So you kind of go through this period of time and you're going to like find yourself. What is the realization? What when you move out, like what is next in life?
Well, I was working in higher ed and kind of thought, oh, I want to be in higher ed forever. I just don't want to be a teacher. Education's really great, though. I love, like, the college environment. And I was working in financial aid, which is not a fun place to work.
Yeah.
Just a lot of people mad at you for not giving them more money.
Yeah.
Even if you want to, there are rules and you cannot.
Yeah.
But I ended up doing a degree in higher ed administration at the Warner School because I had tuition benefits, and that paid for 95% of the master's. So nice. I was like, cool.
Yeah.
And then I left higher ed a year after finishing that degree, so that didn't quite stick either, but I got a mostly free master's out of it.
Yeah,
so,
you have a yeah. master's forever. You get to
right.
say you have a master's.
Right. Like, no, I often forget that I have a master's, and my husband did the same thing and yeah. also pivoted, but that's life.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so then what comes after that then? I like the winding tale of your life.
Right,
is
it is very winding. Yeah. I had been doing this project, I Heart Rock, on the side for a little bit,
I
and
remember.
That was what kind of got me out in the community more, and I was getting more and more social media experience, building a brand, meeting a lot of interesting people. And that ended up connecting me to some folks at a tech startup incubator called Nextcore. So I went and worked there doing digital marketing for like 2-3 years and like learned a lot there and honed my marketing skills more. So it was technically a nonprofit, but also tech and a pretty interesting place.
When you started iHeartRock, was it when you first started? I mean, because that turned out to be really big. I remember it was really, really big. And what something that I love about that story is that eventually you decide to end it, mm-hmm. which I want to get to. But first,
yeah.
I want to talk about the beginning. Like the first day, the first posts, were your hopes and dreams for it to become as big as it did? Or were you like, eh, it's a side, it's just another Instagram, I'll see what happens?
It was kind of interesting. I wasn't actually the original founder. Someone named Maria Gore was. Mm-hmm. And I think a year after she started it, she was interviewing her friends and stuff. And then she moved to San Francisco. And she was like, well, I don't want this project to end. I still Heart Rock and I need people on the ground doing it. And I had been one of the interviewees and they were like, wow, you're so organized. You put all your captions together and organize your photos and you're like really on top of things. And I was like, yeah, do you want me to help you? And they basically gave me the reins and there were like one or two other volunteers who fell away pretty quickly. And then I was kind of running the whole thing by myself after that.
So I mean, at this point in life today, meaning like today, mm-hmm. you are a social media expert. But at that point, On day one of iHeartRock, when you take it over, are you an expert yet? Or are you just like anybody else? You've been on there kind of poking around?
I think I'd been poking around. Like I did the Financial Aid Office Twitter account and
okay,
we had
okay.
a Tumblr for financial literacy. It was
yeah.
that era. And I learned a lot from that and I was learning a lot from iHeartRock, but like not really any professional training or whatnot.
Are you mostly self-taught at
Yeah, like the class I teach at Nazareth now is a social media class, but that didn't exist when I was in college. So
how do you keep up with it? I mean, back then, now, like it moves at the freaking speed of light. The changes are constantly.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. This week I just saw that the trending thing is videos that are like really wide and skinny. It's like a 5200 by 1000 yeah. aspect ratio on Instagram. It makes no sense. And it's like, where did that come from?
I'm sorry to ask such
There's
an elementary,
something.
Like this is probably such a stupid question. I'm so sorry.
No.
But like, isn't the algorithm always changing too? Like, so if you want your thing to get popular, what they are pushing, isn't it always different what they're pushing too?
To some extent, I think okay. a lot of it is like you train your algorithm, especially on TikTok more so than Instagram, but whatever you interact with the most, they feed you
yeah,
more of.
Yeah. You ever fight with old people over this, by the way?
I
fought with Weeze back in the day. I fought with my father-in-law, my parents being like, no, like what you're seeing is not what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing different things.
Oh, totally different.
Old people don't know that. I don't think a lot of
yeah.
old people know that.
Yeah. No. And yeah. I have been getting like, I keep ranting about this to different people, including my students. They're probably tired of hearing it, but like on Facebook, I keep interacting with these reels they serve me out of horror. And I'm like, what is this? And then they're like, oh, she's watching it. We'll give her more.
Yeah.
And then I leave a comment like, you're crazy. What are you doing? What are you talking about? And then they're like, oh, she commented. We'll give her more of these. And they just get more and more insane. It's like the very anti-vax crowd who are like homesteading, putting beef tallow on their skin instead of sunscreen. And whew, it is a scary place on Facebook.
Can I tell you something I do? And you have to tell me, am I a jerk or is this normal? Sometimes I purposely don't like a post, even if I do like it, because I'm like, I enjoyed this experience, but I'm afraid if I like it, I'm going to get more of this experience, and I'm not sure I want more of this experience. Like, give you a recent example. Did you see on TikTok all the people who think the rapture was happening? Yes. I would, like, the videos, I watched one, and then it just kept feeding me more.
Oh, yeah.
And so I started, even though I was fascinated by it, I started quickly scrolling through it, because I'm like, I wanted to retrain the algorithm. Like, no, I don't like this. Stop. I just wanted to see one time what was going on.
I think that's totally fair.
Okay.
Especially with something short-term like that. And TikTok's kind of different, because it's not like your friends or family or business contacts or anything. It's just strangers, so it's not like you're going to offend someone.
Yeah. I mean, I Heart Rock was a really big deal, and I know you said that she started, but you really grew that thing into a big deal.
Yeah, I interviewed over 200 people in that time. It was kind of crazy. And it was every single week churning out content and like a long form interview, which I think kind of made it different than other Instagram accounts because we had so much web content. And it was a lot. It was like editing. I met up with almost everyone in person and I would take notes. I took notes by hand at first and then transcribed them. And later I switched to my computer. But yeah.
I think I remember that when you said you were going to stop doing it, I remember being surprised because you had what everyone wants. You had this like super, is viral a bad word? I'm sorry if it is, but you had this like super viral thing going. And one day you were just like, I think I'm done now doing it. Like, that is so respectable. I think that is so freaking cool. And that took a lot of guts to say, I'm done doing it. Like, what led you to say, I'm just going to be done now?
Well, thank you for saying that. That's really nice. I think it was during COVID and it had become so much work, like just doing the interviews via Zoom instead, and I wasn't getting as much enjoyment out of those conversations since it was virtual. Yeah. And part of it was also like I was running my own business by that point, and it was taking up so much time that it was taking away from the time I had to do my business, and I wasn't really making any money on it. I did a little bit of sponsored content where businesses would pay to be featured, and I was making like $300 or something if I featured a business on there, and it wasn't really like worth it in the long run. So that was a big part of it. Like, I felt like it had kind of run its course and I wasn't gonna like sell it off or hand over the reins to someone else. I was just ready for the next thing.
Yeah. That's the very, very early stage entrepreneurship of looking back at your time and going, oh, I made $1 an hour doing that. Like, I've been there.
Oh, that's how I feel about the podcast sometimes too. Cause I'm like, maybe I'll make money someday, but I spend it's probably 10 hours on every episode and it's like so much work.
Wow.
Yeah,
man. I hope our episode, cause by the way, I did like an intro. I had already done an intro even before you got here about saying how like halfway through it's a lot. I hope that you don't have to, but now that I think about it, you probably will have to do a lot of work on my episode. Cause I don't think I speak well. Sorry.
I'm sure you're fine.
All right. Anyway, sorry. Okay. So during the iHeartRock thing, is this when you realize how good you are at social media? Like, is this when the light bulb goes off and you're like, I am so good at this that actually I could make this into a real living?
I don't know if it was that exactly, because part of it was like choosing the people to give a platform to, and it was their content, and I couldn't do much in terms of like dictating what they posted. Like, I remember having one person who really wanted to be featured and we said yes, but it was like the lowest quality images that were literally blurry on Instagram when we posted them. And I was like, these don't look very good. Like, I think I was like, do you have anything better? And then they like ghosted. So we just posted what they gave us and that was it.
Yeah.
But I definitely learned a lot from it. And I think I developed a good sense for like who would be a good person to feature, which has helped with the podcast also, because I'm like, oh, if I reach out to this person, this could grow my brand in this way. And I'm trying to interview people both in Rochester and beyond Rochester with the podcast so that it has more of a reach and can grow that way. So
yeah,
I don't know.
What I think is just so freaking cool and like the kind of the crux of just entrepreneurship is like I mean, like we all are. At some point, you're an amateur. You're on social media, and you know, you're just learning like anyone else. And at some point, you take a leap. You start Serve Me the Sky, and you are a professor in the last few years. Like, what is it that gave you the confidence to jump off that cliff and say, you know what? I'm not an amateur. I'm a professional. I can do this, and I can make a living doing it. Where'd that courage come from?
I think it was a mix of like courage and desperation. Maybe desperation sounds bad, but I had been at my tech incubator job for maybe 2.5 years and I wasn't super happy there and was looking around for other jobs. And I'd had a lot of interviews that didn't go anywhere and I had started freelancing on the side. So I had 2 clients already and I kept getting requests from people. And I was like, I think there is appetite for this kind of service. Yeah. Like a lot of people can't keep up with social media and don't want to do it themselves. So I'll just jump and hope the net appears. And everyone told me it would. I had a good network from iHeart Rock, so that helped a lot. My husband had insurance through his work, so that helped too, made it a little less scary. But I think I had maybe $1,000 a month of income on retainer coming in from clients when I jumped. And I was like, okay, let's just see what happens.
Let's do it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I admire the fact that correct me if I'm wrong, because I know nothing about the business, but not a ton of overhead, I think, right?
Exactly.
Which
yeah.
is nice.
Yeah. The first week I was working for myself, I went out and bought a new laptop because my laptop was like 8 years old. And mm-hmm. that was like my only business expense.
Yeah, that's something like yeah. here, I mean, you just saw this place, like right. Everything down there, it's cost of goods is huge. Like there's overhead and margins are slim. Like it is hard. There's volume to be had, but it's hard. But I get, when I hear about something like that, where the margin is so high, I mean, your time obviously is your time, mm-hmm. but still it's like the margin is high and it's just a really, I'm very jealous is what I'm trying to say. I'm very jealous of a high margin.
Yeah. I think my second business expense was a desk, because I was working at my grandma's old desk that nice. Was made for tiny people in like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got a desk on Wayfair, a computer, and it was all good to go.
Nice.
Yeah.
So how's it? So what year is that then, when you take the leap? Now you're
that was 2019. Yeah. So it's been six okay. years of running my business.
Okay, great. And so what have the ups and downs of that been like? 6 years, has it been a roller coaster? I'm taking over the world. Oh my God, what am I doing? I'm taking over the world. What am
basically,
I doing?
Basically, yeah. So I left my day job 2019. 9 months later, COVID hit.
Yeah.
And initially it was like, oh, we all have to invest in digital marketing because no one's in person anymore. Like we have to be online. And I was like, great. And business was booming. And then like 6 months later, it was like, oh, we've got to cut marketing right now. Like things are still closed. Yeah. We're not going back. So I started to lose clients and just like very up and down in that first year, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how have you like shown return on investment? Because I think the thing that I've always felt bad for marketing people is I think marketing people get a bum rap because like if things are going well for a business, I don't know if they're very good. If a lot of businesses are good at looking at their marketing efforts and crediting their marketing efforts, they just think that they're great. They're just like, yeah. Oh, see, our business is great, right? But if something goes wrong and now they've got to look at their expenses, they immediately look at marketing and they're like, oh, that's what we'll cut. Well, I don't even know if that's
right.
Like, have you experienced that at all? Or
I think so, yeah. And I think people forget social is very top of funnel. So it's like not necessarily the direct sale conversion that they see a post and they buy something immediately. It's like they hear about your brand, they start seeing your content, and they're like, oh, wow, that's like a really cool sauce company. And oh, I'll look for them at the farmer's market. I'll look in Wegmans, whatever. And it takes like 7 or 8 touches before they even go make a purchase. So people really forget that and think like, oh, well, you didn't get this many clicks on the website or whatever. But
sometimes it takes people years.
Yeah.
I'm 11 years into this now, and I still have people probably at least once a month say to me, I've been hearing about it forever. I finally bought a jar. It's 11 years.
Wow.
And they're like, oh, I've been hearing about it forever. Like, you're right. You have to just over and over and over, and people don't realize that. And then when you look at like the big advertisers, take something like Salvatore's Pizza, they just blanket advertise, And there's some people who roll their eyes and they go, oh my God, every 2 seconds, another Salvatore's commercial. But I've always kind of looked at that and I went, that's like what you have to do. That's how you become, you say pizza and that's how people go, oh, pizza, like Salvatore's. Because they just beat you over the head with it for years.
Right. And people are always worried about like posting the same content again and things like that. And it's like, not everyone sees your post every time you post. People are not waiting on the edge of their seat for your next Instagram post. So totally fine to like reuse things because everyone's not seeing it.
Yes. Is it bad as a 42-year-old man to freaking love TikTok?
No. I love TikTok too.
Oh, I love it so much.
I find it a lot more fun than other platforms. What do you love about it?
To me, it's just I don't necessarily have the time or the patience to like sit down and watch a TV show. I watch football. That's the closest thing I can get to. But other than that, at night, when our children are in bed, I'm going to go lay in bed. I'm ready for bed. And like, I'm not going to start a TV show. I'm going to scroll on on TikTok. That is, I look so forward to that. That's relaxing for me. It's fun. Depending on what's going on in the world, sometimes it's the opposite of relaxing, though, and that can be a problem sometimes. Like, I guess the other day, somebody said Tylenol is terrible. And so I'm trying to go to bed and relax, and all I'm getting is hit over the head with, like, you know, constant political takes. And I'm like, this is stressing me out. I don't want this before bed. So sometimes it actually has the opposite effect. But
real mixed bag over there on TikTok. You'll be watching the rapture coming 1 minute, and then who knows what the next.
Yes, yes. The rapture content has been kind of funny, though.
Yeah.
I have enjoyed that.
We made it. We made it to the day after the rapture.
Did it happen, though?
It was yesterday.
Like, it was yesterday. Okay. Yeah. All right. And so, like, are there just maybe more homes available now? I will. It happened.
I've heard people sold their cars, quit their jobs.
Oh, man. Okay. All right. Anyway. okay. So, into professoring now, real quick, if we can. So, you're doing Sermon of the Sky. This is, you said it's been 3 years, right? 2-3 years?
Of teaching, yeah.
Yeah, of teaching. So it's not necessarily post-COVID, but it's a couple years since COVID. It's kind of post-COVID. And you're just sitting around going, I'd like something else to do? Like, what?
They reached out to me. A friend of mine connected me. They had a social media course. They were looking for a professor
recruited.
To teach. Yeah, I talked to them. And it was a very appealing idea. Like, professor just has that credibility and respect to it, you know?
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I could get back into higher ed. Like, I teach workshops too and trainings and that kind of thing. So I was like, oh yeah, it's kind of connected. And I found out the adjunct pay and I was like, this is not a good idea. I should not say yes to this. And then I said yes to it anyways. But that hourly rate is, like, I did so much math and I was like, this could be as low as like $7 an hour.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And then it's like, after you teach 10 classes, you get a raise. And it's like, great.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny.
I think I got like a $100 raise this semester or something. So.
Nice.
Ooh, yeah.
Pretty good.
Very exciting.
Is it one night a week or what? Like
two, yeah.
2 nights a week? Mm-hmm. Same kids or 2 different classes?
This fall, I'm teaching 2 different sections of the same social media class back to back.
And what's the class called?
Social media.
Social media? That's awesome.
Very broad. So when I started, I was given a couple of old syllabi and they were like, teach it however you want.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Cool. Yeah.
There are not required readings or assignments or anything that I had to implement. So I kind of treated it as like, at the time I was like, it's my magnum opus. It's everything I believe about social media and I'm going to put it into this course and like structure it all accordingly. So it was like really fun to do. It was like a ton of work. And then the next spring I taught another new to me class. And then the next spring I taught another new to me class. And I've had 3 different courses that I teach and done the same kind of like massive process of designing a course from scratch.
Do you love doing it?
I enjoy it. Yeah. And then sometimes like, it's really interesting. It can be very hit or miss with the students. Sometimes I have like really engaged students who are like really excited to be there or learn from me. And I like make connections with them. And sometimes I feel like I'm talking to just crickets and nothing is hitting and I'm like doing improv like, hello someone, I hope you think I'm interesting or you're learning something. And
yeah,
it's weird sometimes. Yeah.
Naz seems like good kids.
It
like,
is good kids.
Have been lucky enough to speak at local colleges and actually in real time spoke at MCC yesterday, and I do like talking to MCC, but the classes are pretty split where in an MCC class there will always be some kids that are really into what I'm talking about. There will always be a couple kids though who are in the back corner sleeping.
Yeah. And I always try to treat it as like, well, that's your loss if you're not paying attention or whatever. But
do you mess with kids? If a kid just falls asleep in your class, you don't mess with it? You just let them sleep?
Yeah, usually. I mean, I haven't really seen them sleep. It's like 2:30 in the afternoon. So it's like after lunch, but it's not like super sleepy time.
Yeah.
I taught a 9:40 class last semester. 9:35. It was very hard to get out the door with like a toddler.
A.M. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
I mean, you're a morning person and I'm not. So it was like hard for me to get there and I'd be there like the last person there. My students would all beat me there and I wouldn't have had any coffee yet. And I'm like, hello, I'm ready to teach. How are you?
Did the kids have like a made up role too where they're like, if she doesn't show up within 10 minutes.
They probably did.
We made that role up in my call.
There were so many times when they'd be like, oh, wow, you're here early today. When I was walking in like 2 minutes before class started.
That's funny. Yeah. I don't know what it was. We made up a rule that we were like, you know, if they're not here or if we all leave, then we can't get in trouble.
Yeah.
We all leave. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Hey, listen, I rushed. What time? 25 minutes. That's not bad.
You're doing good.
I rushed. I hope it's okay.
No, you're good.
You sure?
Did you have mom questions though?
Yeah. I mean, am I allowed to keep asking
questions?
Yeah,
go for it.
I mean, I could talk to you for like a long time. What time do you
gotta
be home?
Well, I figure that we can cut this. The nanny is here till 5. So if I'm home by 5, if I leave by 4:30, we got plenty of time.
We can make that happen. So how old is your child?
He is 15 months, almost 16 months. Yeah.
15 months.
Yeah.
So I have a 9-month-old. I'm right behind you. Yeah. But a 6-year-old as well. I mean, you throw that into everything else we're talking about. You're running a business. You've taken on being a professor. You're adding more and more being a professor. I mean, this comes in. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to you. It's a lot. What do you say? What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot. And we also have 3 dogs. And we have a home renovation project that's been going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
My husband left his day job in 2023 and started his own business. So a lot of things to juggle, a lot of balls that have to get dropped sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is like the greatest thing that ever happens to you. You know, he like is so funny at this age and makes me laugh all the time and is also getting into everything. And
yeah.
It's like stressful and all consuming and wonderful. It's all the things. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you always want to be a mom your whole life? Or you like,
I kind of always assumed I would be. And then I went through a brief era where I was like, will I inevitably traumatize my children the way I was traumatized?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, went to therapy for several years and finally came back around to having kids. And then was kind of like, when is the right time? It's never going to be like the perfect time. Like, I don't know if we're ready, but we're kind of ready as we'll ever be. So I guess we'll go for it.
I was watching a thing about trauma, about experiencing childhood trauma and how, and this is probably a wild take and, you know, I'm sorry if it is, but it was like a little bit of childhood trauma is maybe not bad because it makes you like bust your ass later in life because you're like proving something. You're trying to prove. But a lot of childhood trauma is obviously a really bad thing because now you're developing like, you know, coping mechanisms that are very unhealthy. I don't know. Do you agree with that? I just heard that yesterday and I was like, I get it. I mean, I felt like I had trauma, but also like, I don't know if I actually had trauma.
I think it can give you a good sense of humor too. So that's
yeah.
fun.
Oh, we're dealing with rejection too. Like I looked like this in high school. So I dealt with a lot of rejection. So that's been good for business is just being told no all the time. I'm like, oh, I've heard that before. But what kind of trauma are you talking about?
I think there was a lot of like, you have to kind of fit in this box and be exactly this kind of person. Otherwise, you don't get our love and affection and attention was kind of the vibe. And that made it hard to...
From the world or from your parents?
From my parents, yeah. So growing up and like eventually getting to a place where I could get tattoos or dye my hair and be like comfortable with those kinds of things and confident enough to do it.
They don't like that.
Yeah, my family's very anti-tattoo.
What do they do for a living?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom and my dad was in consulting, so I never really understood what he did when I was a kid.
No tattoos, no colored hair though. So
my brother got a tattoo and he studied abroad. They were like, you better not get a tattoo when you study abroad. And he was like, well, I wasn't going to, but now I will.
Yeah. See, it can backfire.
He came home and my mom was like, we had a cottage in the Finger Lakes. And she was like, I do not want to see that tattoo all summer long. Cover up. And he had to wear a t-shirt anytime he went swimming.
Wow.
He swam out to this raft in the cove, took the shirt off, and she pulled out binoculars because she wanted to see the tattoo anyways.
Do you have one sibling?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
younger brother.
While that's happening, are you kind of watching this and being like, I really want tattoos?
I don't think it even occurred to me until I was a little older that I had like always enjoyed other people's tattoos and thought they were really cool and like told a story. And then for a while I was in the era of like, well, I don't even know what I would get. What would I want on my body permanently? And then my mom died in 2021 and I got like 7 tattoos in 3 years. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. And my grandma and her died 5 weeks apart. So that was a lot.
Yeah. That's terrible.
My whale tattoo is like for my grandma, actually. I don't know exactly how she felt about tattoos either, but
I'm so sorry that back to back like that. Were you close with your grandma?
I was really close with my grandma. Yeah, it was rough.
That sucks.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is trauma too. I mean, losing a loved one, like,
and it's hard to watch too when it's happening in like slow motion. And
was it long drawn out stuff?
My mom had cancer. So it was like 2.5 years of that. And then like they said, oh, probably 2 or 3 months to live. And it was like exactly 3 months, but it was, I'd say like the most painful 3 months of my life. Like that was one of the hardest chapters of my life, that and like the first month my son was born.
Yeah. You said you do therapy. I freaking love therapy. I don't know where I'd be without therapy.
I'm so glad to hear that you go to therapy.
Oh yeah. I off and on throughout my entire adult life. There's been some off periods too, where I just say, well, I'm healed, you know, but I don't think I was, spoiler alert, but it's been really good. And I've learned some real like tricks, like I mean, little thing, non-medication tricks. Like, just, I'll give you an example. Like, one of the things is my therapist taught me to, the things that are stressing me out today, because I'm full of anxiety, everything's stressing me out. I go ahead in my calendar 6 months. So whatever, March, whatever. And I'll write in my calendar, I'll be like, stressors from September 24th, whenever we're recording this. I'll go, stressors. And then I'll put the things in there. And 99% of the time, when I get to March and I read that note that I wrote myself, I will look and I will go, oh my God, that's, I don't even remember those issues. Yeah. Like, those were, oh, that's, a, well, that turned out just fine. And that turned out just fine. Mm-hmm. And that actually led to a better thing. And like, that happens all the time. And that was learned in therapy. Yeah. And I use that all the time.
That's awesome.
The other thing is, I always have something on my calendar I'm looking forward to, because I could get into these little bouts of depression, but like, that is, it lifts me up to see like, oh, I've got a vacation coming up in January. Mm-hmm. It lifts me out of it.
That's a good one. I will have to tell that to my husband, because he was just saying yesterday, I feel like I don't have anything to look forward to.
Gotta have something to look forward to. Yeah, always. And also, like, another thing was, when you have kids, do you feel like you're not allowed anymore to be selfish about anything?
Pretty
much. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it depends on your definition of selfish, but
Well, doing something just for you, mm-hmm. that maybe it's something that you enjoy, that your husband doesn't enjoy, that your child isn't going to be able to come to or mm-hmm. doesn't enjoy, but it's just for you. I get guilt out of that.
Yeah, I feel guilty too.
Yeah, like, I love going to the movies. Mm-hmm. But if I go to the movies, I'm like, oh, I'm being a shitty husband. I'm being a shitty dad. Does that happen to you at all?
Yeah, definitely. I think I have a book club, and I'm like, probably more social than my husband. So I have like my book club, and the podcast is like kind of social. Yeah. But those things that I go out and do, I'm always like, oh, well, he has to put the baby to bed. And like,
yeah.
And I'm going out and doing this fun social thing, and he's not doing like an equivalent thing. And I should be home with my kid, or like, I've been out teaching this week, and I had a client road trip, and I had all this stuff. And
Yeah. You ever get a hotel room? Like, when you do a client road trip, you get a hotel room and it's just you in a hotel?
I haven't yet. It sounds kind of fun, though. I mean, my last road trip was to Binghamton, so I wasn't super eager to stay overnight in Binghamton. But
this is full on dad guilt, but like, I go to a couple trade shows a year. Hotel room, it's fucking awesome. It's just awesome. It's like, dude, I'm just going to sleep in a dark. I can just turn the lights off. And you're like, well, what do you do? Sorry. And you're like, well, what do you do when you're, my wife would be like, well, what do you do? You watch movies, you like, what do you do? And I'm just like, I just turn the lights off,
lay in the quiet,
I lay there until I fall asleep, and then I wake up whenever I want to.
I just ordered loop earplugs because I'm like very sensitive to sounds, and like, usually when we're having dinner, like, the toddler's like throwing things and yelling, and one of our dogs never wants to eat unless the toddler's eating, and then she just borks behind the high chair, and like, it's just so many sounds, and like, the dog's licking their legs or their butt when you're trying to fall asleep at night. Uh-huh. It's like, oh my God, all these sounds.
Yeah,
so like, a silent hotel room sounds really nice.
Yeah, it's nice. You should do it.
Yeah
it's like a birthday thing. Do it for your birthday or something.
Hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunch and Door podcast network, which is everywhere.
Hey, this is Wade Reed with the Level Up Podcast. How do you take your coffee? What's your favorite espresso drink? Do you prefer wash process or natural process coffees? If any of these questions interest you, tune in to the Level Up Podcast presented by Nominate Meals on the Lunch Adore Podcast Network. We're looking at every link in the coffee supply chain, from growing and processing to cafe life and home coffee brewing, to find the topics that will enrich and maybe even stretch your experience of coffee. So have a listen, check us out on Instagram and Substack, and as always, enjoy your coffee.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Last question about entrepreneurship, if I can. And then I want to do It's a Lot. Can we do It's a Lot?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you see as the future in what is this like unpredictable world of social media? Because you're teaching social media. It's a great tool, but there are some who say it can be bad for you. And honestly, I think it can be. I think it can hurt self-esteem. I know it hurts my self-esteem. Everybody's life is better than mine when I'm on social media, you know? What do you think about not only your business, the future of social media, but also how do you continue to evolve? How do you plan to grow your business? Do you plan to grow your business? What do you think?
Yeah, I think social media is such a big and complex beast, you know? Yeah. Like, I think we need more digital literacy for kids in schools and for like elderly people who don't understand everything they see on the internet, but like teaching kids that the things you see online aren't real, or the comments that people make about you are not necessarily about you. It could be like their own issues or insecurities and things like that. I saw a great TikTok of a mom like preparing her 11-year-old to get on social media someday by teaching her things like that about how other people are approaching your content and how what they say isn't really about you. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of stuff would help with like the mental health impact of social media. I worry a lot about like AI and algorithms and like the increasing polarization of the platforms and how it can push people into more and more radical spaces, and the lack of like fact checking since Meta got rid of fact checking. I think there's like just a lot of dangerous things that are spreading, especially in like the wellness space. I get like pretty riled up about that. So I don't know where it's going to go in the coming years. I think keeping up with it is like a job in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
For me, I have never really wanted to like have a ton of people under me and like run a huge agency or anything with my business. I just kind of want to do work that I enjoy with people I enjoy working with.
Would you grow though? Like, let's say all of a sudden phone rings, 10 new clients tomorrow, and you're like, I can't do all this work. Would your strategy to be to select a few of them and say no to a few? Or would your strategy to be, okay, let me hire somebody? And
I think I'd probably like refer them out to other people in my network instead of hiring. Like, I think I mentioned to you before that I'm terrified of having employees under me. Like, I would be very scared to do that. Like, not that it's not possible. I think I would learn and grow if I did that. I just don't know. At least not in this stage when I have like a young child at home and so much we're balancing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Maybe in a future stage, but
when you start a business, like the job is to hustle and to shoulder the business and to do everything. But when you start to hire people, the job shifts and it's not that anymore. And now it's to be a leader. But that skill set really wasn't required on day one. And so that's like a hard thing. And it's why a lot of businesses just kind of, I think, maybe plateau or stop or even fail at a certain point, because the skill set required to scale a business is different than the skill set required to start a business, if that makes any sense. I don't know. I've found
that. Yeah. No, and I like, for the most part, enjoy social media work. So I wouldn't necessarily want to have it all done by people under me. Like, I always still want to have some of my hands in that creative space. I think what I do want to do more of is strategy work and helping people figure out what to do with their social and how to approach it instead of making all the content for them day to day. Like, I would be fine doing that for a couple of clients, but the more strategic work is a little more interesting and not as hard to, like, it's so burnout inducing to make content for a lot of clients and just exhausting. So
Like, that's there's definitely got to be, I mean, there's certainly a cap on creativity, like it's and then do you ever have days where you're just not feeling it?
Especially if I have to make videos for a client, I'm like, I can't do a voiceover today, like I'm gonna do text to speech and let the computer read it.
Creativity to me, it's just in waves. Like, one day it's just here's five ideas, and the next day it's like I couldn't come up with one idea if my life depended on it. Like, oh, it's crazy. All right. All right, so let's transition. Let's do It's a Lot.
Yeah,
I'm so excited to do this.
I'm all excited too. I didn't even get to tell a story that would have been like a good story for your interview with me, though.
Oh, you want to tell the story?
I don't know how to like fit it in naturally.
Fit it in now. All right, here's naturally. Ready? Emily, do you have any stories that would be really great for this podcast before we switch to It's a Lot?
Well, something that was a lot in my entrepreneurship and parenthood journey was that as soon as I came back from my maternity leave, my largest client, I had said, okay, I'm all ready to come back. Like, when can we have a meeting? Get me up to speed. And they said, oh, we're doing some digital strategy and restructuring and thinking through some things, and let's talk in a couple weeks. And I was like, that doesn't sound good.
Oh yeah.
And I followed up with them a couple of weeks later, and they were like, yeah, your services are no longer required. We needed boots on the ground in our New York City office. So bye. It was 3 years of working together, and that made up 62% of my income. And I had a 3-month-old at home.
Son of a bitch.
I opened that email while I was feeding him a bottle in the morning and just started sobbing.
Like, it just feels like you've been punched in the stomach.
It was brutal. Yeah. Even worse is that it was a children's TV show that I loved working for. And like, I played the music from the show for my kid all summer long, and then came back and they were like, bye.
And so now you're like, we don't listen to that song anymore.
No, I'm like still trying to release those bitter feelings because I'm still mad about it.
That
like,
is so hard.
Who
I'm
does
sorry.
That to someone?
It's
and it's so common to come back from a parental leave and like lose your job or lose
and,
clients.
And it's really hard also to like lock contracts in. I don't know if you've tried to do that or not, but like, I have some big clients, right, who don't want to sign contracts. And this, you know, that email that's is scary. Always looming.
Yeah,
like
right.
I'm always so worried about it. And I've gotten emails like that before. And I think like another misconception about owning a business or about being an entrepreneur is that people are like, well, you're the boss. What great job security it is. Dude, it is the opposite of job security. Do you know how many, like, that's you getting fired, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I get fired a couple times. Probably I get fired about once a month. People are like, oh, don't you feel good? Like, you can't be fired. You're in charge. Like, no, I get fired all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I have been fired 50 times in the last 5 years. It's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then I ended up basically the whole fall just hustling and hustling to get more clients. They all came in at once. And then in December, I was working like the most insane hours, like every night, working like 9 to midnight on top of whatever I could do during the day, and just like had my best business month ever that month, but also was like dying. So,
well, doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah.
Quote Kelly Clarkson, I think, right? Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah. That's great. I'm glad to hear that. All right. Now we'll start it.
Yeah.
All right. And your music just started right now. Boom.
Boom. I'm curious, like, with your journey from radio to podcasting, what is it about audio that you love so much and wanted to like keep going with a weekly podcast?
All right, that's it. As you hear the It's a Lot music starting there, what that means is that if you would like to hear part two of this podcast, which is basically Emily interviewing me, then you need to go ahead and click on the It's a Lot podcast, which if we did our job correctly, should already be in your feed. If not, you can just search It's a Lot or go to the Lunch Door Podcast Network website and you'll be able to find it on there. Part two really is Emily interviewing me, and it's you know, Emily's interview is she's a good interviewer, man. I talk about stuff in here I've never talked about, very personal stuff, difficult times in my personal life, mine and my wife, and I don't know, it's vulnerable stuff. So I hope you enjoy it. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening to this portion, the first half of the podcast. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.